White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 444.
White Rocket Entertainment.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello, and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with thewareaglereader.com, and by people like you. You know who you are, Auburn family, AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family. We love you so much. And it's a brand new year. It's a brand new 2020. And as always, I'm Van Allen Plexico. And as always, I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
Always. And John, we are convening here. We are convening here to conduct the second. Did I not even put that one on here on the new... Isn't that interesting? I didn't even look. I remember I redid the soundboard when I got the new computer, and I moved everything around. So I'll keep an eye on that. I think I got rid of all the trial stuff because I didn't think about us doing another trial. So I no longer have this trial is out of order. The whole court is out of order. But
you just have to do those live now.
I just have to do it. I'm doing it live. That's right.
Come on.
But okay. Well, I don't have that anymore. That's fine. I knew something was missing. Yeah, we're here to conduct the trial of Gus Malzahn 2.0. Last year, you came up with the brilliant idea of doing basically a pro and con episode on Gus's tenure as our head coach, where we laid out the prosecution material and then the defense material, and we just pretty much left it to the audience to render their own verdict one way or the other. And it was a very successful show. I judge that based on the fact that quite a number of our listeners contacted us afterward and said that some of them said it changed their minds. Some of them said it certainly gave them things to think about, gave them pause, you know, and it made them reevaluate their positions. And so I would consider that a big success, even if nobody changed their mind, because we're not really here to try to change anybody's mind. We're just wanting to kind of clear the air and lay out the facts so that when each of you out there makes up your own mind, if you wish to, about all of this, you have all the information that's available in front of you to make a rational judgment on it. Would you say that's fair?
Yes, and because just to make sure that you get all the information you need to make the decision.
Right, yeah, because there's lots of disinformation, as with everything in the world these days and forever. There's a lot of disinformation. Now, so the bulk of our show will be that, and I've done some research to kind of back it up. I've been teasing this for the last week or two. We've had to put this show off a couple of times mostly because of the holidays. I've been teasing it on and off that there's some interesting information that I have to share and to put out there. And it's none of it stuff that's secret or new. It's information that's been out there forever. It's just that I think that people kind of make up their own minds or get their own predetermined feelings about these things. And they don't necessarily always go back and look at the readily available facts and numbers because, you know, they like to think...
I don't have facts to back this up.
But in fact, there are facts to back it up, and instead we should all...
Blame yourself.
That's right. So we're going to have the facts to back it up, and then if you still don't like it, blame yourself. But before we get into the trial, though, just a couple of very quick things. The basketball team, we have to mention, right? They're 13-0. They beat Mississippi State yesterday afternoon. I got to watch the game very late on the DVR, but it was another one of those games where, you know, last year, and I'm not trying to run them down. I mean, my gosh, they're 13-0. Last year's team was like watching a Learjet take off and fly around. This year's team, though, just, you know, every bit as effective, if not in, you know, so far in the season at this same point from last season, more effective because they haven't lost. Of course, they haven't played Duke either, but like they did last year. But you know, this point in the season, they're not exactly a Learjet. They're more like a big lumbering, you know, C-130 or something. But, man, they do eventually get off the ground and into the air, and they don't come back down. So what are your thoughts on the basketball team after the Mississippi State win?
I mean, it's a good win. Road wins at the SEC are valuable. I think, you know,
yes.
If you haven't watched a lot of college basketball before last season, here's what your expectation should be.
Yeah.
A good season, a season that will get us to the NCAA tournament, means winning 50% or more of our conference games.
Mm-hmm.
And that means we're going to lose some conference games. It's going to happen, especially on the road.
Yes.
And so you have to prepare yourself for that and not freak out when it happens. It's part of college basketball. And so literally, if this team, you know, is a game or two above 500 at the end of conference play with the preseason record they have, they'll be in great shape to make the NCAA tournament, and I will be very, very happy. You're right, it's a different kind of team. But, you know, there was a point in the first half of that Mississippi State game when we couldn't throw the ball in the ocean, and we were down about 8 points and couldn't get a foul, and all the calls were going against us. And
which has been pretty much every game this season, honestly.
Yes, but then they just turned it on.
They always
did. And had a big spurt in the half and played well despite, you know, a tough crowd and a tough opponent and some referees that were tough also.
Well, there's two things for me. One, it's just like, you know, when you compare, you know, last year's team would you know, be ahead, be behind, back and forth, and then they'd go on those three-point streaks of hitting them, and then they would, you know, toward the end of the season, the formula we started settling on that was so successful for us was we would play good defense. Not necessarily super great, but we play really good defense, and we stole the ball a lot. We did a lot of transition baskets. We would go on those three-point shooting streaks where we couldn't miss, and then at the end of the game, they'd hand the ball to Jared Harper and let him drive, and he would make like 90% of his free throws. That's how it felt to me last season, especially in the second half of the season. Other than the Virginia ripoff in the Final Four, the last actual ball game we lost was that Kentucky blowout in Rupp Arena in the middle of February. It's been a long time since we legitimately lost a basketball game, but and certainly lost one by more than one shot. So they would go, they would do that. They would steal the ball a lot. And they would go on streaks with the three-pointing, and then they would rely on Jared Harper's driving at the end and his free throws. That was our formula last year. This year's formula is pretty different. This year's formula is we may not score a lot, particularly in the first half, but we play such amazing defense that you hold us to 9 points in 10 minutes, and you're like, oh, man, we're going to win this game going away. No, we've got nine. You've got like 15. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, we play such good defense that even though we can't throw it in the ocean, the other team's not either. And so when our shooting finally does come around, we take the lead and we hold it. And it's not so much stealing, though we still steal a good bit, but not like last year where Bryce and Jared would get in there and just, you know, zip, you know, quick hands. This year's team turns it over more by blocks and by just strong, solid defense and just rejecting advances on the hoop, on the goal. And then we play, we don't hit three-pointers nearly as well. We don't hit free throws nearly as well. But the defense is so good that hasn't mattered yet, because the teams that we're playing haven't been in the position that we needed to make every free throw to seal away the game, you know. So it's just a completely different team, a completely different formula. The other thing I think is really important is, like you said, expectations, and managing expectations is very important, because even if you are Duke or North Carolina or Kentucky or Arizona or UConn or, you know, or Villanova or one of those type of teams, even if you're one of those teams that has top to bottom five-star players every year, they go years every other couple of years that they don't even make it past the first or second round of the tournament. Even when you're a really good team with really good players, you still need some magical happenstance and luck to get to like the Final Four. And we had that against New Mexico State last year. And, you know, we were one shot away from not even getting out of the first round, as good as we were playing. So, you have to bear in mind that if this team could be better than last year, and New Mexico State could make that shot, and they could go home after the first round. So please, Lord, Auburn fans, let's just take this season as it comes, hope for good things, enjoy what there is to enjoy, but don't feel like they're huge, abject failures if they don't get back to the Final Four. Thoughts?
Oh, amen. I mean, and we got a long way to go.
Yes.
I mean, I'm there are people who are going to freak out when we lose three games in January.
Yeah.
So.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, you know, we've got lots of winnable games ahead of us, but we know that if this team gets into a scoring race, if the other team is able to score on us, they could get ahead of us far enough that we can't come back because we don't have the three-point shooting arsenal that we had last year. So we have to keep the scores low for a while, and we have to keep the lid on. And if we get up against a team that has a way to score on us, like Mississippi State looked like they could the first 10 minutes or so, you know, the formula Mississippi State used on us last night, the first quarter of the game, so to speak, if they could have done that for four quarters of the game period, they would have won easily. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a credit to our defense and everything else that we were able to overcome that. But if we go up against a team with better personnel than Mississippi State that's able to do what they were able to do, which is reject anything in the paint, and we can't make three-pointers, we'll be in trouble. So we just have to remember, this team is very – even though this team has a bunch of seniors on it, it also has a bunch of freshmen. And they've got a ways to go to really gel as a team. I think they're going to get – I think the ceiling of this team is way higher than last year's team. I thought that last year's team – reached their ceiling right after the Kentucky loss, and they pretty much stayed there. And I feel like this team is winning despite being at about 70% of their ceiling. What do you think?
Sure, but it's, again, it's just turned January.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We didn't want them to peak yet.
No,
absolutely. A lot of college basketball teams that peak in January, and then they go down by the time March comes around.
Right.
So.
Yeah, no, I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining at all, and I'm not wanting to hurry up at all. I'm just laying out that this team has a higher ceiling, I think, and more room to improve, and we got plenty of time to get there.
That's fair.
Yeah. Okay, so enough about basketball team. One other thing I want to point out real quick, and then we'll get into the trial. You are not available on New Year's Day, which is perfectly, perfectly fine. You give your all and every now and then, but I was just in such a mental state that I needed to do something. And Jared happened to be available, Yard Sale Artist, who's part of our network, and so he agreed to come on and just chat for a few minutes about the Minnesota game, the Outback Bowl. And it was just a good way to blow off some steam, and we griped and complained about some stuff in the emotion of the moment. You know, and a lot of the stuff we said was just us letting off steam. But when you post it like that to YouTube, it kind of stays out there. And my feelings about the game have morphed a good bit since that game. But you know, what's funny is usually we post a video there and we get, you know, 100, couple hundred views over the weeks and months. But for whatever reason, this one's kind of caught on and blown up. It's closing in on 400 views. And I feel like a lot of the people watching it are Minnesota fans because we don't get a lot of comments usually. I mean, people that want to comment on our stuff, you and me, they usually do it on Twitter or they send us an email, you know, whatever. But, there's a lot of comments, and they're all from Minnesota people. So I'm trying to be gracious and tell them, yes, absolutely, you guys won. You did great. Congratulations. But then the next one jumps in crowing. So I'd love for some Auburn people to jump in. I don't know if that's a bad thing. Maybe I shouldn't even say that at all. I guess I just let it go, right? Some of them are nice, but some of them are trying their best to make me not like Minnesota very much, and that would be unfortunate because I have nothing but respect for them right now. It's too bad that some of their fans are wanting to sour that. So, but if you get a chance to watch that video, you'll see that it's really just us kind of aggravated and stuff. So, all respect to Minnesota, and I hope their fans will win with class. That's all I'm saying. So, you have any thoughts about Minnesota finally, or are you ready to? Because you never really got a chance.
No, what we'll talk about this game in context of the trial. I was frustrated. The reason I was unavailable is that I went for a long walk after that game was over. Yeah. I needed to get away. So
I don't blame you a bit. All right, let's get into the trial then. What I did, and you suggested that I look into. Well, all right. So what we had been talking about, one of the things we've been talking about is, and you feel free to set this up however you want, but let me kind of preface it. We had been talking about, you know, Gus loses, you know, 4 games a year, 5 games a year, whatever. And we were saying, does he lose games that he's not supposed to lose, that we're supposed to win? How often does that happen? And how often did that happen to our previous coaches in the last several decades? And how do they compare? In other words, you know, we praise Pat Dye or Tommy Tuberville as these great, great coaches that could hardly do any wrong. And then we run Gus down as, oh, he loses these games that he shouldn't all the time. And I just wanted to kind of go in and separate the fact from fiction and get some actual numbers to back up. Does Gus lose more games he should win than Pat Dye, than Tommy Tuberville, than Terry Bowden, than Gene Chizik, and so on? So I went and found that out, and I put together a document with that information laid out. I put down the year, the team we played, our ranking and our opponents, or our opponents' ranking and our ranking for every game we lost where it seems like it was a toss-up or we should have won. And I think that listeners are going to be surprised at just how many there have been over the years. So I'll say this, no Auburn coach in the modern era has lost more than maybe one or two at the most in their entire tenure against absolutely teams they have no business at all losing against, like a UAB or a Jacksonville State or a Louisiana Tech, Louisiana Monroe, those kind of teams. Auburn, under every coach from Pat Dye to the present, doesn't generally lose those games, which is interesting because Alabama has. LSU,
Florida lost to one double team.
Tennessee, LSU, Georgia, they've all done it except us, depending on how you define it. So we're going to look at that. Now, how do you want to preface the and set up this trial?
Sure. I just want to go back and say the like you said at the very beginning, the purpose of the entire thing is to look at the evidence as a whole. So this analysis of the games, the losses that were bad losses, games they should not have lost, is going to be a big chunk of it this time. And then we're going to look at a few other facts on each side of the case. And then we're going to kind of, as you said at the beginning, leave the verdict with the listener. But we did this last year, and I felt like when you raise this question about does Gus lose games he shouldn't, and how does that compare to other Auburn coaches in history, I thought that was a really good point, and it's something that we should consider in the context of Gus as a whole. So that's kind of how we came to this. So this analysis, the bad losses analysis, is going to be kind of the bulk of the trial episode. And we have some other facts besides that, but this is going to be kind of the main entree to get us there.
So why don't I go coach by coach, and after each coach, we can discuss specifics.
I like it.
All right. And you have the document open too, right? So you can follow along and look at
it. I'm looking at it.
All right. Couple of notes up front. One, this is just funny. I tweeted this, but for those that aren't on Twitter that want to hear this, we like to point out that I had a really popular tweet a while back where I said that Alabama was ranked so low after the Iron Bowl, they hurt our strength of schedule going into the bowls. That was very popular. Well, in 1980, the document here, I begin actually with 84, because in 83... the only game we lost in 83 was to Texas, and they were ranked higher than us. If we lose a game to a team ranked higher than us, it's not even on this document, obviously, because that's a good loss. You know what I mean? That's not a bad loss. When you lose to a team that's ranked higher than you, then that's how it's supposed to go, and so it's not on the list. The only thing I put on this list are when we lost to teams ranked below us or unranked when we were ranked. Okay. Now, the other caveat is, in some seasons, we either were bad from the beginning or we got bad so quickly that later on we would lose, but it no longer looked like a big upset because we had already lost 3, 4, 5 games, right? So like if we were in a 5-6 year and we lost our fifth loss or our sixth loss, I didn't include that because we'd already lost a bunch of games anyway, so it's not like losing to anybody would be an upset unless it was Louisiana Monroe or something. Okay, I just wanted to make that clear. Now, about 83, in 1983, Auburn played teams that were ranked 3, 4, 5, 7, 8 and 19. That's pretty incredible in an 11-game season that 6 of the 11 games we played were against the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 7th, 8th, and 19th ranked teams. And the 19th, the easily the lowest ranked of the ranked teams we played were Alabama. So I said, there goes Alabama hurting our strength of schedule again by being 19. Haha. So 81 and 82, we were kind of on the rise. And so losing in those years, there really weren't any upsets. I mean, when Nebraska beat us in 82, well, so what? Nebraska was awesome. We were on the way up. That doesn't make the list. So in 83, we only lost one game, and that was to a higher-ranked team. So we have to start in 84. So here, John, is 1984 through 1990, Pat Dye. Because, again, 91 and 92, the seasons went south so quickly – there really weren't any upsets. We were just bad, and when we lost, it was because we lost because we were bad, okay? So 84 through 90, we had good to really good teams to great teams, and we still lost, okay? So how many games did Pat Dye – if I asked you between 1984 and 1990, how many times did Pat Dye's Auburn teams lose to lower-ranked or unranked teams, you would have said what? Like, just a ballpark number, like – 84, 85, 86, 87, 88, 89, 90. So that's in 7 years with Pat Dye, how many games would you have said he lost to unranked or lower ranked teams?
I don't know, 5 or 6 times?
You'd have said 5 or 6. It's 14.
Wow.
14. So here we go. 1984, we were number 1, and we lost to number 14 Miami. In the New Jersey Meadowlands in the kickoff classic. Now, why Miami was 14th, I'll never know. They were brought back most of the team that had just won the quote unquote national championship beating Nebraska, but they were 14 and we were 1 and we lost. Also in 84, we were number 11. Florida was 13 and they beat us 24-3, just killed us in Gainesville. And then everybody remembers this one, the Iron Bowl in 84. Alabama was 4-6 and unranked, of course. Auburn was ranked 11, and they beat us, 17-15, where we missed the field goal and they stuffed us on the sweep when Bo ran the wrong way. So in 84 alone, we lost 3 games we had no business losing. 1985, Bo Jackson's Heisman senior year. We were number 1 in the country. We went up to unranked Tennessee, and they kicked our butts like 38-20. And then at the end of the season, we were ranked number 7. We played another unranked Alabama team, and they won again with Mike Shula and Van Tiffin. Mm-hmm. So in just 2 seasons, Pat Dye's already lost 5 games to unranked or lower ranked teams when we were in the top, mostly in the top 10, no lower than 11th in all those games. We were no lower than 11th in most of those games, and in 2 of those 5, we were ranked number 1 in the country, and we lost to unranked or double digit ranked teams. Okay, 86, we were number 5, Florida was number 20, and they beat us in Gainesville. Also in 86, we were number 9, Georgia was number 17. And this is the nothing stinks like a wet dog game. And interestingly,
Turn the hoses on them.
That's right. And interestingly, this is the only one of these until we get to 1990 that's at home. So Pat Dye had a thing about losing on the road or at neutral sites for some reason. But this is the only bad home loss so far is to Georgia. 1987, we were ranked 3rd. Tennessee was ranked 14th. And they tied us 20-20 because that was the law. Johnny Majors, we had a tie. 1988, I know you remember this one. We were number 4 in the country on the way to the national championship, we thought. LSU was unranked, and it's the earthquake game because we had 6 points with a minute to go in the game. You want to jump all on Gus wasting a good offense wasting a good defense with a bad offense. Pat Dye had the greatest defense possibly in Auburn history that year, and we scored 6 points on LSU. Okay, so I'm not being partial here. I'm just saying, if you want to jump on Gus for quote unquote wasting a great defense with no offense, look at 1988, where we played an unranked LSU team and would have played for the national championship, but we scored 6 points in 4 quarters and they scored 1 touchdown and beat us and knocked us out of the national championship game. 1989 was the Blame It on the Rain game. We were number 4. Tennessee was number 12, and they beat us like 17-14 or something. Also 1989, we were number 11 after that loss, and we go down to Tallahassee. I was at this game, and Florida State was 14 and beat us, like 22-14, I believe. And then finally, 1990, Auburn was number 4, Florida was number 15 in Steve Spurrier's first year. You think Florida beat us that year? They beat us the tune of 48-7. I was at that game, too. Also 1990, and this is the... Of all of Pat Dye's losses, this is the only one in a good year that you can really say we had no business losing. And that was to Southern Miss, who was unranked. We were 15th in Auburn. This is the second of the two home losses for Pat Dye and in this whole seven-year run. But, of course, this was Brett Favre.
It was Brett Favre. They had Tony Smith and Michael Jackson was at wide receiver. And this Southern Miss team also beat Alabama there, too.
Yeah. And then finally, the Iron Bowl. We were 20th. Alabama was unranked. Stop me if you've heard this one before. And Alabama beat us in Birmingham. All right. Now, I ignored 1991 and 1992 because those were 5-win years. And by the way, that's another thing to throw into the hopper during the trial. Again, say what you will about Gus. The worst season we've had under him was 7-6, the year that the quarterback imploded. And our defense got injured, and our running back got injured, right? Remember that? Our running back was injured. Carl Lawson was injured most of the season, and the quarterback didn't work out. So we were really limping through that year. And we lost, like, the triple overtime game to Arkansas. We would have been 8-5 that year, too. So we've never had a worse season than 7 wins, 7-6, whereas 1981, 1991, and 1992, Pat Dye had 3 seasons of 5 wins, 2 of them losing seasons, 1-5, 5-1. All right, so let me give you a couple of takeaways and you dissect and carry on. Pat Dye's bad losses, all but 2 came on the road or on neutral sites, but most of his losses were either to lower ranked or unranked teams that were power teams. We didn't lose to, other than Southern Miss, we didn't lose to a, and Southern Miss back then was still a, you know, they were like, Southern Miss then was, kind of what maybe Memphis is now, I guess, or not really, a step below Central Florida, but maybe a step around Memphis or so this year. Okay, so what do you think about that?
I think it's interesting. To me, like the games where we're on the road and we're ranked close to the other team, like in 84, we're 11, Florida's 13, it's in game. So I bet,
yeah,
betting wise, that was probably a toss up or, you know, so that one, I'm not so bad about, but the thing that leaps out to me is 3 losses in 6 years to unranked Alabama teams.
Yeah.
if Gus Malzahn was ranked, had an Auburn team ranked and lost 3 times to Alabama when they were unranked, they would tar and feather him in a minute.
4-6 one year.
I mean, that, forget Alabama's record. Just the fact that they were ranked and we were ranked and we lost to them 3 times. I know it was in Birmingham, but that's, whew, I forgot that.
Yeah. Well, after the 84, after the 85 one that he said he got hives and couldn't sleep? Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That was about the time he started coughing. Bless his heart. Yeah, he shook things up and went on and won 4 straight Iron Bowls after that, 86 through 89. I agree.
And also, I think you made a good point that it really, the games were not at home. It shows even back then there was a big home field advantage for us. Mm-hmm. And so that's why the Georgia loss was so shocking.
Yeah.
In 86. We had no business losing that game.
That was also, by the way, not to get too into the weeds with the details of the game, because that's not the point, but I would point out that we should have won that game, but Brent Fullwood broke loose for a touchdown run that would have won the game, and the referee said that they called him his forward progress stopped, even though it hadn't, and blew the play dead. So that was a really frustrating thing. But, yeah, I mean, only 2 of those, I said 14, but, I mean, Pat, and again, yeah, you can throw out the 84 Florida, but I guess the point there was even though it was 13 against 11, with us 11 and them 13, they destroyed us 24-3. I mean, that was horrible. That was the game where Bo came back from injury and played, and we still lost 24-3. We just couldn't do anything on offense. There goes Pat Dye wasting one of those great defenses again with no offense. So, I mean, which one is the most egregious? The 84 Alabama, the 1990 Alabama? The 90 Alabama is the one where Gene Stallings had lost a bunch of games, and we were, like, laughing at him.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And then he turned around and beat us.
Yeah, like maybe 90 Alabama.
Yeah.
85 Alabama was a tough one, too. You know that.
Yeah, that was the Van Tiffin kick. So, all right, well, let's keep going then. Let's get into Terry Bowden. This won't take very long. Bowden coached 93 through half of 98. I didn't really count 98 because we were 3-8, so you can't really say we got upset that year. Every game we played was how it was going to come out. So 94, we were on our 20-game winning streak. Georgia was unranked. We were ranked third and hadn't lost a game in 20 games, and we had that tie where we missed a field goal. Matt Hawkins missed a field goal at the end.
Yep.
And so Georgia once again beat us in a tie, as they like to say. 95, we go to Baton Rouge. LSU was unranked. We were number 5, and this was the Phantom Whistle game with Pat Nix, and we lost. One of those many of those low scoring LSU games during that era where they had really good defense and we did too. Also in 95, this was the night of the Braves winning the World Series, was the Arkansas game where an unranked Arkansas team beat an 11th ranked Auburn in Little Rock, where we came back and had a chance to win and missed a field goal at the end. This is sound like a broken record. 1996 was the famous first overtime game in SEC history. Unranked Georgia. Auburn was ranked number 2? I can't. We couldn't have been ranked number 2 that year. That must be a mistake. I'll look and check in just a second. Went to 4 overtimes, and Georgia ended up winning, and Georgia ended up 5-6, and yet they beat us in 4 overtimes. 1997, Mississippi State. Oh, this is the game where I had a flat tire on the way to the game and got there late. Mississippi State was unranked with the coach that didn't wear socks.
Joey Dunn.
Isn't it funny what you remember from these things? And Auburn was number 11, Damian Craig, and we lost 20-0 at home. All right, so that's Terry Bowden's bad losses. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 between 94 and 97. So 5 in 4 years. That's not too bad, honestly. So what do you think about Terry Bowden in terms of our
again, about the same pace as Dye, pretty much. But two of those were, to Georgia.
Yeah. Oh, we were number 20. I just went and checked. By the way, I just went and checked. When in 96, Georgia was unranked, we were 20. I'll go ahead and there.
So two of those were to unranked Georgia teams. We were ranked and we were playing at home. So yep. those are bad losses, like I said, with Dye and the Alabama loss.
Yeah. No, absolutely. All right. You want to go to Tuberville?
Let's do it.
All right. 1999 doesn't count because we were bad. And 5-6. In fact, the thing about 99 that's memorable is not that we were upset, but that we actually won some upsets, right? We beat LSU, and we just dog-whipped LSU and Georgia. I mean, we just horse-whipped them. We beat the snot out of them those two games. The ones we lost, we weren't ranked or anything anyway all season, as far as I know, after 98. So 2000, we didn't really have any bad upsets. We had just kind of competitive losses. Tuberville's real losses of note were 2001 through 2005, and obviously 2004 doesn't count because we went undefeated. So 2001, you're gonna remember these two I'm going to mention here. Arkansas. 2001 Arkansas was unranked. We played them in Fayetteville. We were 17, and Tubbs versus the Hogs, they killed us. He couldn't beat Arkansas in a lot of years. And 2001 was the infamous Iron Bowl where Alabama was unranked with Francione. We were number 17 and on the way to winning the SEC West. And it was the second time Alabama beat us in Jordan-Hare. We both ended up 7-5. So that one was that was the game where they broke Cadillac's shoulder collarbone in the first quarter. And that was all of our offense we had that year. So once Cadillac was out, we just limp to the finish. We turned around and lost to LSU the next week and ended up not getting to go to Atlanta after being locked in. We that season just ended badly. I guess I could have included the North Carolina lost that year in the bowl game. I'm not sure how. Let me check. Give me 1 second here. It won't take 1 second to check on that one. That was North Carolina was unranked and we were unranked and they beat us in Atlanta in the Peach Bowl. Okay. So 2002, another unranked Arkansas team comes to Auburn and we were 24th and they beat us 38-17. Tubbs versus the Hogs again. This was the one where their running back is still running. Nobody ever touched him. 2003, that year was problematic for me because we lost a number of games that year, but none of them were just egregious, except that we went over and played Georgia Tech in Atlanta, I was at that game, that's right. They were unranked, and we were 17th, and I don't believe we scored a touchdown in that game.
We did not, and it's egregious.
Yeah. And then it wasn't until like the third week. And then the last one of Georgia Tech again, 2005, an unranked Georgia Tech team came to Auburn. That time we were 16th, and I don't think we had lost in a year and a half, you know, over a year because of the 2004 winning streak, and they beat us again. And I know that you and I both just suffered through losing to Georgia Tech 2 years in a row with teams that were easily better than them.
Amen to that.
So I really think that with Tuberville, it's Arkansas and Georgia Tech were the ones that, at least so far, that look bad for him. Now, wait, there's a little bit more. We lost to a 21st-ranked Wisconsin when we were 7th in 2005 in the Capital One Bowl. In 2006, a Gus Malzahn-coordinated Arkansas beat us pretty badly in Auburn when we were ranked 2nd in the country and they were unranked. That was a Houston Nutt team. Also in 2006, we were number 5 and got whipped by Georgia, unranked. What is it? It's funny. When Georgia's highly ranked and we're not, we upset them. But when we're highly ranked, Georgia always upsets us. It's so weird. And then 2007, the famous South Florida game. Unranked South Florida beat us in Auburn. We were 17. And in again, 2008. Even in 2008, that's one of those years I normally wouldn't even comment on, but we went up and lost to Vanderbilt. I was at that game. We went up and lost at Vanderbilt in 2008. So even in a bad year, I have to include a loss to Vanderbilt, even though it won't be the last one, I don't think. So what's your verdict on the Tuberville years? I mean, that's quite a few bad losses. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. In 10 years.
Yeah. And again, some of them at home to unranked opponents. I mean, home unranked Arkansas, home unranked Alabama, home unranked Arkansas, home unranked Georgia Tech, home unranked Arkansas, home unranked Georgia, home unranked South Florida. That's not good. Now, South Florida, they were number one.
That was a weird year.
A week or two, for like a week after they beat us. But that was the year that everybody, 2007 was the crazy year that everybody lost.
That was the year that was so crazy. LSU ended up winning the, quote, national championship, unquote, with two losses. Mm-hmm. That ain't right. We've had multiple undefeated years that we are not called the national champion. And LSU has a trophy for a year they lost two games. I will never, never, never stop complaining about that. All right. So last stop before we get to Gus. Now, we don't have a big window of samples here because Chizik only coached 4 years. But do you know, I mean, if you throw out 2012, because losing to anybody in 2012 was not an upset, really. And in fact, it's interesting that in 2012, we came close to winning a couple of big games. We actually were really close to beating LSU, a decent LSU team, among others. But ultimately, that was just a bad year. I think it was we had a close game with Clemson that year too, didn't we? I feel like it. I feel like it. Okay, so we actually played pretty well in 2012 for a while and then kind of fell apart. So the only two I have where we're unranked and lose, where the other team is unranked and we were ranked and we lost under Chizik was 2009 Arkansas. Again, they were unranked and we were 17th. And then that 2011 Clemson game at Clemson that it did two things. One, it ended our winning streak going back to before Cam. And two, it's the first time we lost to Clemson since the Eisenhower administration. Of course, we've done a lot of that since then, but that was the first – that 2011 Clemson game where our current offensive coordinator was their offensive coordinator, and our current defensive coordinator may have been their defensive coordinator.
I believe he was.
Yeah. That was the first time Clemson had beaten us since Eisenhower administration, since the 50s, and since I Love Lucy.
That was the game that Dabo said kind of put him on the map.
Yeah. So your thoughts about Chiz? I mean, let me say this. All right, 2010 speaks for itself. But 9 and 11, you know, we lost a few games, but never like to teams that were well below us.
That's right.
They were kind of on a par with us.
And the two that we did were on the road. You know, what was it? You know, we were 21st and we were playing at Clemson. They probably were in the others receiving votes category that week. So, you know, not huge things here.
All right. So what we've seen so far to review before we get to Gus. Pat Dye lost 14 games to inferior or lower-ranked or unranked opponents in between 84 and 90 in those 7 good years that we're counting. Terry Bowden lost or tied 5 between 94 and 97. Tuberville lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 between 2001 and 2007, and then you can throw Vanderbilt in 2008 in too. Chiswick lost really 2 if you don't – I mean, we can – you know, again, 2012 is a whole other – you know, that's a whole other case. But 2009, 10, and 11, just really 2 losses to unranked teams. And as you just said, those were – it's not like we were ranked number 1 and lost to unranked Arkansas. We were ranked 17th and lost at Arkansas, who was not terrible with Petrino. And the next year they even went to, like, what, the Rose Bowl, the Orange Bowl or something. Okay, now here's Gus. All right, so Gus Malzahn has now completed 7 seasons as our head coach, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Yeah, 7 seasons. So let me do this again. If you didn't know, how many games would you think I have listed here for Gus in 7 years? Bad losses or unranked losses or, you know, whatever.
8 or 9.
All right, well, let's see. 2013, nope. I mean, losing at LSU, and I don't think they were – here, I can check. Let me check. I want to be fair to people. Like, oh, well, he lost LSU in 13. All right, well, let's look. It only takes me a second to do this, folks. I got it at my disposal. The 2013 LSU game, they were number 6. We were unranked. So you can't fault that one. So the first bad loss for Gus, everybody remembers this, is the butt snap game against Texas A&M in 2014. We were ranked 3rd. I think we'd already lost to Mississippi State, but they were like number 1. So we only dropped to 3rd, and A&M was ranked 24. So they were a ranked team, but barely. And they beat us by like 1 score in a close game where we made a mistake. Okay. 2015, again, that was a year crap happened, and I don't even count it because it was a bad season. 2016, you know what? People are going to complain. Let me – hold on. 2015, I'm going to tell you – I already did this, but I'm just going to look. We lost at number 8 LSU. We lost to Mississippi State when neither one of us was ranked. We lost at Arkansas. Neither one of us was ranked. We lost to number 19 Ole Miss. We were not ranked, and they were. We lost to Georgia. Neither one of us was ranked. And we lost to number 2 Alabama. We were not ranked. So 2015, I mean, you can complain that – you know, you could make the case that we should have been ranked. We should have won some of those games. But the team that we now know we had, it's hard to find fault with those losses because none of them is like we were 3rd and they were unranked. You know, those are all – we were both unranked or they were higher ranked and we weren't. In fact, we even beat a ranked Texas A&M in College Station when we were unranked. So if there's any surprise game in 15, it's that we actually won a game we shouldn't have won that year. So there you go. Do with that what you will. All right, so 2014 A&M is the only one we have so far. 2016, we lost to stop me if you've heard this before. We lost to an unranked Georgia in Athens when we were number 8. Remember, that was the year when we were depending on Petway to be our entire offense and Sean White, and they both got hurt. So we had no offense. 2017, LSU was unranked. Auburn was ranked number 10. That's the 2017 LSU game where we had them down most of the game, right? And they came roaring back at the end. And
where we got conservative.
Yeah. Okay. So that one is one. You can put a star by that one, Your Honor. Put a star by that one. I think we have a a flashing light. There's one. All right. 2017, we lost to Clemson, but they were third. We lost to Georgia, but they were sixth. And Central Florida was ranked 10th. So when we lost to Clemson, Georgia, and Central Florida in 2017, they were all top 10 teams. Those were all top 10 teams. Okay. We beat two number one teams in a row that year, Georgia and Alabama. We lost to three top 10 teams. That sounds a lot like 2019, honestly. All right. 2018. Now we've got a couple of you might want to ring up on the chalkboard again. 2018, Mississippi State was unranked. Auburn was ranked number eight, and they ran for like 7,823 yards on us. That quarterback alone, right, ran all over us. And then Tennessee was unranked, and they came in. We were 21st, and we all remember what they did to us that year. That was the one that really jumps out, is Gus blowing a game to a team we shouldn't have lost to. So, and then 2019, I guess you can add in Minnesota. But again, let me see. I think that we were ranked. I haven't even seen how the rankings have changed. But let me see. So we were number 12. Minnesota was number 18. And we lost by one score, neutral site in the bowl. So you can throw that one on there too. All right. So 2019, Minnesota. Okay. So my take from that is Gus's losses have been mostly to very good teams, either equally ranked or higher ranked than us. The only really egregious ones in all seven of his years have been 2016 Georgia when our offense was all hurt, 2017 LSU when we made stupid mistakes in the second half and let them come back, and then 2018 Mississippi State, Tennessee, and then our bowl game last week. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in 7 years. What are your thoughts on that and how it compares to the previous ones?
Yeah, there were a couple other games that I debated about.
Okay.
Whether they should be in this list or not.
Okay.
And like you said, there could go either way. I mean, I think Georgia 2015, we weren't great and they weren't great, but I felt like we were better than them. But that's a tough one. A&M in 16.
Okay.
That was kind of, but I think the when people think about the Gus and his legacy and this kind of stuff, I think you're going to point to the, like you said, the A&M game in 14, the 2016 Georgia game, the 2017 LSU game. And to me, the 2018 Tennessee game was the number one by far.
You mentioned the A&M game, and I agree, and I thought we should have – I think the reason we thought we should have done better at that is we thought that Auburn team was good. They barely lost to number two Clemson when we were unranked. We came in that season unranked. Clemson was number two, and we 19-13. So we were unranked, and Texas A&M was 17th. And they beat us 29-16. We felt like we should have won that game. And I think from what I remember, that's the game I always point to as the game where I kind of turned against Gus a little bit and said, I'm willing to part with him now. Before that, I fought to keep him. After that game, I'm like, you know, you want to fire him, fire him. You want to keep him. Whatever's fine. I'm fine with it now. That was the game, though, where we felt like even though A&M was ranked 17 and we were unranked and they were favored and they should have won, it was the way we lost, right? And I think that is something we need to talk about too. Is it's not just that Gus has lost a handful of games that we should have won. It's that they're fresher in our memory. You know, there's not a lot of people running around today going, "Man, I'm still so mad because of the way we lost to Southern Miss in 1990." You know, if we hadn't run that one play, man. But yet people
I'm still mad about those Georgia Tech games.
Oh, I am too. I know. I'm still mad that Bivens let Richardson run out of bounds to stop the clock for Van Tiffin to kick the 85 field goal in the Iron Bowl. But there's not a lot of people doing that. It's you and me, okay, and a few other people that we know on Twitter. But I'm saying there's a lot more people that have these burning little embers in their mind of that butt snap against A&M or running that terrible offensive set of plays against Clemson, you know. with the spinning fullback and all. Those things are fresh in our mind, and they seem more egregious because they seem like we just did dumb things and lost rather than we lost to a team that should have beat us. So in other words, even though those teams were higher ranked than us and quote-unquote were supposed to beat us, we still look at it and go, you know, we could have won those if Gus hadn't done something to mess us up, to sabotage us. I think that really gets at a lot of this, right? We've been looking at these cold numbers. And let me say from my vantage point, when I look at these, the conclusion I draw is we've lost games at it. We lost games to teams we shouldn't have lost to at a higher rate under Pat Dye and Tommy Tuberville than we have under Gus. Okay, my first conclusion is we lost at a higher, like more games per year average. We lost more games per year over the tenures of Pat Dye's and Tommy Tuberville's tenure than we have Gus Malzahn. But, when we look at Gus's losses, which are fewer, okay, they're fewer in number and they are fewer per year in terms of should we have won or not, quote unquote. When we look at them, the circumstances of those losses are fresher in our minds and they make us mad, and we felt like he did stuff to actively sabotage us as compared to, you know, doing everything right and we still lost to a superior team. What do you think? What do you say to that?
I think the other piece of it is, I think there's the common thread in a lot of those losses is the offense underperforming.
Yeah.
And he's the offensive coach, so yep, he gets the blame for that.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, I think that's a big thread in a lot of these losses is the offense. You know, in any of these losses, did the offense like tear the other team up and we couldn't stop them? I mean, that was, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm getting at, that we feel like Gus actively did things to lessen our chances in games that we already, quote-unquote, shouldn't have won, and he made it even harder on us. That's how I think a lot of people view it. I'm trying to play like the devil's advocate here, okay? I know that the stuff that I'm saying and you're saying, a lot of the stuff I'm saying, I know our listeners are going to, a lot of them, are going to take specific issue with all this. I understand that. You can't do a show like what we're doing right now and not tick off people who are sitting there going, well, I understand that. We're going to get flack from both sides on this. That's just how it is. When you start speaking facts and throwing out statistics and numbers, a lot of people on both sides of any argument are going to get upset. That's just how it works in life, okay? That's a given. We're doing it anyway. But what I'm saying is, I think a lot of people feel like Gus, instead of giving us the maximum chance to win against teams that were better than us on paper, he did stuff that gave us a less than normal chance to win against those teams. That's not what I'm saying, but that's, I think, the argument. And it is what I'm saying about a couple of games, honestly. There's a couple of games that I can think of where I'm like, you know, we might have won this game if Gus had the flu and had to stay home that day and somebody else had run things. But then again, we might not be where we are with him, without him in those other games where he finds a way, you know. So you get the good and the bad with anybody.
It's true. And so I think the exercise was valuable in the comparison sense to see what was out there. I think, you know, I think with any coach, losses, you know, you remember the losses more than you remember the wins.
Yes.
And so, I mean, I think when I look back at Gus's tenure, to me, the two losses, I mean, I'm not going to talk about the Florida State game, but the two losses, that regular season losses that really stick with me are the, you know, the LSU game in 2017, when we had the big lead, he got conservative.
Yeah.
Because, again, if we'd have won that game, we'd have been in the playoff that year. And in 2018, the Tennessee game, I just feel like that we had no business losing to that team.
You know, people are going to point out, there's going to be a segment of our listeners who say, well, the Florida State game, you should talk about that one because Gus blew it. Well, I mean, you can say how you want, but I mean, without Gus, that was a 3-9 team. With Gus, we were 12-2 and playing the national championship in the fourth quarter. So you can say that I've seen people, I mean, everybody that listens to us comes from a different place in their mind and their life. So some of them don't know what I'm talking about. There is a segment of the Auburn fan base. I'm just letting everybody know this. There's a segment of the Auburn fan base, you the listener right now, maybe one of them, maybe not, who wants to argue blue in the face that the reason we lost to Florida State in the Rose Bowl for the national championship was Gus Malzahn.
That's crazy.
I'm just telling you, there's people, I see it on Twitter all the time, there's people that throw that in as an example of Gus blowing it, losing a game, just like that Tennessee game you're talking about. And okay, so, but I'm saying I'm not counting that one on this list because it was a competitive pair of teams. They were number one, I believe. We were number two, and we lost by one score in the last 13 seconds. That is not a bad loss. It's just by, and there's no definition. There's under no definition is losing to the number one team in the country on the last play of the game a bad loss. It's just not.
If you think that's the case, then you're doing some big revisionist history. In the weeks leading up to that game, that Florida State team was described as one of the greatest college football teams ever.
Yes.
Many times by the media. And they were a big favorite in that game.
Oh, we were given no chance by anybody to be competitive. It was supposed to be like the Buffalo Bills or the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl all those years. Yeah, we were supposed to get killed. And we knew. I mean, I remember my brother-in-law texted me during the game and said, wow, you believed, you know, you knew. And I'm like, I of course, I watched the games. You know, I'm not buying into this ACC hype. You know, you go out there and hammer Duke every week and you think you're supposed to be, you know, 83 Nebraska or something. I'm sorry. You know, but you know, we're winning the kick six, and they're out there hammering Duke, and we're supposed to roll over to those guys? Give me a break. But losing to them was not a disaster. It was a disaster emotionally and all that, but I'm just saying in terms of whether it was a bad loss or not, no, under no circumstances could you call it that, no. So the ones we're looking at are the ones where we, on in every measurement, by ranking, by record, by whatever, we should have won, and we didn't. And with Gus, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and if you count the Minnesota game now, obviously 6 in 7 years. That's a rate of fewer than a game a year in a longer season, whereas Pat Dye had more. Pat Dye had 14 in 7 seasons in an 11-game season.
My Pat, people... I'm much more upset about the Tennessee game in 2018, the Mississippi State game in 2018. If you look at, like, the advanced stat rankings, S&P Plus and those, at the end of the year, you know, that was – the two teams were basically even, and that game was in Starkville. So,
yeah,
I think the ranking at that time hadn't really caught up with the reality. So I'm not I'm not as upset about that game as I am as the Tennessee game at home.
Right, right. I told people all week on Twitter – that they would hear on this show some things that might surprise them. And I think that's probably number one, what I just said, number one surprising thing. Pat Dye, I'll say it again, Pat Dye had 14 bad losses in 7 seasons that we looked at of his 10, of his 12, right? Yeah, Pat Dye was our coach for 12 seasons. We looked at 7 where we were really good, and he had 14 bad losses in those 7 good seasons. I didn't count the 5 and 6 years and the 5, 5 and 1 years that we had with him. I just counted the ones where we won like 8, 9, 10, 11 games. Whereas Gus has fewer than one a year in 7 years. So what is it that makes us, I laid out one theory, Your Honor, which was that, well, there's one theory is it's recency bias, okay? Another theory is that we can point to things, as you said, he's in charge of the offense, and when the offense seems like the problem, we blame him. And that's fair, but is that it? Is that the reason why we're having this trial? What do you think?
I mean, I think part of it is because the discussion that we're having right now is about losses to teams that we should not have lost to. It's not all the losses.
Right.
And so I think, when, you know, in the current SEC, we play a lot of highly ranked teams.
Yes.
And so I'm sure there are games in there that other people feel like we shouldn't have lost that game. Even if we like games that we were in or were competitive with that were to higher ranked teams or evenly ranked teams. But the purpose of this was to look at kind of games we had no business losing.
Right. You know what? I'm sorry. I think I just, as you said that, you made me, I'm going to sum my argument up here and then you can have it. All right. Because I just thought of this and I'll forget it. Pat Dye's teams, Tuberville's teams, they lost games to LSU, to Arkansas, to Georgia, to Alabama, whoever, Florida. Mostly, they lost to teams that were of that nature that were those teams, those programs, those big name programs, but in years that they were unranked or they weren't very good and we lost to them anyway. Now you can blame the rankings that they should have been ranked higher, or you can say we were ranked too high, whatever. But they tended to lose to bad LSU teams, bad Georgia teams, bad Tennessee teams, bad, you know, whatever. Gus's teams have lost to those teams, and we got spoiled, I will argue. This is part of it. I don't think this is all of it. I think it's part of it. I think that over the 80s and 90s and 2000s, Auburn fans, including me, we got spoiled by being able to play less competitive big name teams and beat them quite often. That's not the case so much anymore. Not only is LSU routinely much better than they were back when Pat Dye played them, not only is Alabama much better than they were back when Pat Dye played them, Georgia is on and off. I mean, us losing to Georgia is just a mystery to science, and I don't even go there. But not only that, Arkansas is better. Well, up until the last couple of years. Ole Miss has been better. They beat Alabama twice recently. Mississippi State unquestionably has been better. I would put to you that the only team that we play occasionally that is markedly worse than they were back in the Pat Dye era when we were beating all these teams is Tennessee. Because Tennessee was one of the hardest teams we played in the 80s and early 90s. And now, and they still beat us, but they're not that program anymore, but everybody else is so much better. So I put it to you that we have been losing to much better versions of teams that we're used to going at least 500 against. And it's much harder to go 500 against these teams now than it used to be. And for that sin, Gus gets criticized for, oh, you're, you know, 2-5 against so-and-so. You're 3-4 against so-and-so. Well, yeah. Who is beating those teams right now? You know what I mean? It's not this isn't 1985 Alabama. This isn't 1985 Ole Miss. This isn't 1990 LSU or 89 LSU or 99 LSU. We're used to beating those teams 50-50 because they would be down 50-50 of the time. And They're not really anymore. Every time we play these big teams, they're big teams. It's just a different world. Now, I don't want to come across as advocating so Gus is perfect and we should keep him and never fire him. That's not my point. I have to make this argument so many times on social media. When I step in and try to put some perspective on things and lay out some numbers, people naturally, and I get it, people naturally assume I'm actively advocating for this coach, that he can do no wrong, and I'm the sunshine pumper. No, 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 no. I'm just saying, when you make your judgment on this coach, look at the facts, not just at your feelings. Okay, if the verdict is fire his butt tomorrow, I'll be like, okay, fine. But that needs to come from the facts and not just cause you're pissed off. And I don't mean you, I mean everybody. Okay, that's my case, Your Honor. The prosecution for my side rests.
Why don't we take a little break and thank our patrons, and then we'll come back and wrap up the trial portion.
I like it. Good plan. All right. Well, this is an atypical show. I'm pretty fired up, I got to tell you. And I'm not angry at all. I just feel very passionate that I want, if we're going to judge Gus Malzahn, I just want it to be on the facts, okay? And people want to read things how they want to read them rather than looking at reality. If you feel like at the end of this he is guilty, then fine with me. I don't care. If you find that we should give him another 10-year contract, whatever. Okay. But we couldn't do shows like this or our more normal shows where I'm not screaming the entire show if we didn't have the great support of our great patrons who may be reconsidering their support after this crazy show. We've got to think. And if you want to join their ranks and help us continue to produce shows like this that hopefully at least get you to think. And if you want to argue with us and debate us, come on Twitter, send us an email, whatever. That's fine. We've been doing it for years. But we have to come to www.auwishbone.com, www.auwishbone.com, and click on the Become a Patron. I anticipate we may lose a few patrons once the season is over and people understandably turn their attention to the things, but we have the bills to pay every month. They don't go down just because the football season's not underway. So if you want this show to continue, we need your support. Go to www.auwishbone.com. Here are the fine folks who are currently, as of this moment, helping us. This is the most as members of our family, most recently updated list. Matthew Flowers, Carl Von Drunker, Samuel Salvatore, and Christopher Burleson. You guys are the backbone, and we couldn't do it without you, and we thank you a million times. Then we have our other great supporters, Phil Amthor, Ben Spooner, William Glenn Matthews, Gary Grant, AU Fan KSC, Wynn Carroll, Brian Gray, Winston Boddy, Willie Carden, Tom Anderson, Susan Trawick, Logan Chilton, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. You folks are fantastic. Christopher Stewart and his dad, Clinton Stewart. War Eagle guys. Mickey B. William Morgan. Phil Davis. Joshua Corbett. John Otsuki. Preston Settle. Daniel Odom. AU Falling Up. Always enjoy him on the video shows. Alchemist. Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, Will Summerford, David Hegler, Johnny Caldwell, Theodore Gary, Reynolds Wolf, who I hope is continuing to recover, Joel Beckham. I hope that Brandon is too. He had something recently too. So I hope those two guys have come through there. I hope they're out there. They're moving around. They're getting it done, you know. Joel Beckham, Valiant Armies, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson and Kanjian, Catherine England, George Gaston, John McCune, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, and Jared the Yard Sale Artist Alberic. Then we have Blake Heron, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flack, Papa Todd, Russell Millen, Kevin Kenoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Randall Walker, Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Tony Perry, Alex Wynn, and Josh Teal. All right, we're getting close to the end now. We got David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, and C.T. Wayne. And we have Paul Bankson and Joseph Eilif, our two newest members, along with Jeremy Minton, Ward Am Wade, Spanky, J.W. Rice, Jason Albrick, Justin Bean, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Wyatt, Trevor Johnson, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Thomas Brinson, David Smiley, Matthew Wagstaff, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth, and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Nicholas Craig, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Chris Brant Rumble, Surfer Chickify, and our other one-time and our anonymous donors. We thank you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com. John, how are the bowl pick'em contest standings going among our patrons? I believe Jared is no longer in first place.
He is not. Bowl games are over. I believe. Maybe there's one more tomorrow.
Well, we still got there's one more plus the national
title. National title. That's right. And the current leader is Darren Pyle, whose entry is titled "I don't have facts. I don't have the facts."
I don't have facts to back this up.
Apparently he does, though.
He does. He is one game ahead of Yard Sale Artist, whose entry is titled Pat versus Eagle.
I love it.
And he is one game ahead of Steve Houston, whose entry is titled Celebrate.
I love the names of all of our entries, because a lot of them took stuff from the show, and that's just super cool. I got to point out, I'm languishing down about three or four spots from the bottom, but if you adjust for my not being an idiot, I get four more wins. Right now, I'm one below you.
I was going to say, you're one win below me, and you missed the first nine games. So yeah. I think we know how that went.
I would be about eighth, I think, right now, if I had four more wins. So still not great, but I wouldn't be down near the basement. So, oh well. I've done pretty lucky on some of the recent ones. I did miss the Minnesota-Auburn game, obviously, but I've gotten most of the others right. So, all right, so that's one of the many things you get to do as a patron, is be part of our super cool bowl pick'em contest. We have like, what, 20, 25 to 30, mm-hmm. something like that? That's awesome entries. Yeah, way to go, guys. Bearing in mind that not everybody I just named is here for the AU Wishbone. We have people on there that are there for our Bond show, for the White Rocket show, you know, for our books and stuff. So we appreciate all you guys participating, and we'll be doing the NCAA brackets in a couple of months. So don't forget that you can watch our video shows. The video channel is kind of blowing up. We got about 250, 300 subscribers now, when we had like 12 a year ago since we started doing our little live shows. So I hope we can continue. We do them occasionally when the time is right. So we'll have a few more of those coming up. And I guess the last thing here then is what else you want to say about the trial? I have rested my case. Do you have any further evidence to give, or are you going to render verdict?
I'm just going to throw in a few things, kind of follow up on some facts that we put in last year.
Okay.
Again, I'll continue with a few anti-Gus things, then a few pro-Gus things at the end.
Okay.
On the anti-Gus side, Gus in big games, 2-5 in bowl games now.
That's not good.
Against Georgia, he's 2-6.
Mm-mm.
That's bad. And against LSU, he's 2-5.
Ugh.
And both of those rivals change coaches during that time period also.
Yeah, there's some of the LSU and Georgia losses that make perfect sense, and there's some that don't make any sense. But honestly, Dye had those, Tuberville had those, Bowden had those. It's not new.
That's right. I looked at offensive production under Gus, and this is something we talked about last year, where how did the offense do over the course of time? Again, the points per game ticked back up this year, but our offensive advanced stats ranking was still like 38th in the country. Okay, and this is like, so here I'm going to read the rankings in order, like from 2013 to now, like using S&P Plus offense. 7th, 3rd, 42nd, 31st, 34th, 47th, 38th. Not great.
No.
And the yards per play, rushing yards per play, other than some success, in the middle there, kind of gone down. So that's, we talked a lot of last year. We're not going to go back into all of this, but one of the big things we talked about last year in the trial was personnel decisions by Gus. Quarterback recruiting and development, talked about that as an issue. And you could say, it's an issue now because we have one quarterback on the roster.
Yeah.
And Bo Nix, did he get better? Did he have to play so much? Could we have played Gatewood more against Florida, that kind of thing? I think the big thing, the difference you could see down the road there at the quarterback position is obviously having Chad Morris to help with some of that. Maybe he can make a difference in that area. Another personnel decision thing I think that's continued to frustrate all of us is the continued rotation of offensive personnel, even when it allows the defense to reset and slows Auburn down to time when it seems like it doesn't help us.
Right.
Kind of the over micromanagement of the offense in that way. we talked about some specific in-game coaching decisions. And you referenced some of that earlier, like the Clemson game plan in 2016. But I think the 2016 loss to Georgia, we threw the ball too much. If we had run the ball a little bit more, I think we would have won that game. Mm. The 2017 LSU game is the poster for this, a game that, we were winning big at halftime. I got too conservative and they came back. And in this year, I think, you could ask, was the team prepared to play in those tough road environments? Was Bo Nix properly prepared for those games? And one of the other things that we wanted to, that we mentioned before was sometimes Gus's body language is a problem. I think during the Florida game in particular this year was the issue. And then we talked a lot last year during the trial of Gus 1.0 about the Gus offense. If we're going to have Gus as our coach, are we running it or not running it? We did use tempo more in 2019, and I feel like we ran the quarterback more as well. And so that's, some things that, I think we've moved more in the direction of running his offense this year we have in the past.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And now wrap up with a few progress things. He's been at Auburn 7 years. We've won the SEC once. We've won the SEC West one other time. Mm-hmm. And we played in three kind of big bowl games during that time period. The main thing I would say on the progress side is that we have been a consistently performing top 10 to 12 team in the country. The problem is that the schedule and the SEC have been harder, as you were referencing earlier, than any Auburn coach or any other SEC team faces.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the advanced stat rankings of where Auburn finished at the end of the year. This is not wins and losses. This is how well did the team play and is adjusted for how good your opponents are. So this is basically the end of the season ranking for Auburn for every year. Number 5, number 3, number 24, number 13, number 10, number 18, and number 10. So his worst season 2015, we were basically the 24th best team in the country in these rankings. Mm-hmm. So the average is about 11th. So that's not terrible. I think it's not great. I think people would say, you know, they wish it was more.
It's about where our recruiting has been those years too. So it all balances out.
We're coming to that. On the pro Gus side, also the one of the things is Gus's record versus Saban. He's 3-4 versus Alabama. What's everybody else's record versus exactly. Alabama? you know, Kirby Smart is 0-2, mm-hmm. Or 0-3 now. You know, the only people that have beaten Saban since Gus came to Auburn in 2013, the only active coaches are Gus, Dabo, Coach O, and now that they're back in coaching, we can count Les Miles and Hugh Freeze. But the only ones who have beat him more than once, you know, are this is credible, Hugh Gus, Freeze. Dabo, and Hugh Freeze.
Yep.
So,
and there's also the record. I don't know if you got it on there, but I keep updating this, and I get so much crap for this. But the four teams we lost to, and again, we had no business losing to Minnesota. I get that. But the four teams we lost to didn't exactly have bad years. This is not sunshine pumping. This is not making excuses. I'm just laying out the
–
I do have facts. This is just laying out the number. It's so funny. People get like this like they're hives. People get like poison ivy. They get this reaction to facts. Oh, God, you're putting out facts. You have an agenda. I don't want to talk to you. No. Georgia's 12-2. Florida's 11-2. Minnesota's 11-2. LSU is working on 15-0. So as of now, the four teams we lost to have a combined record of 48-6.
Mm-hmm.
Now, should we have beaten Minnesota? Yes. Should we have beaten Florida? Probably. Should we have beaten Georgia? Maybe. Should we have beaten LSU? We darn sure came close to it. We could have gone, you know, 12-0. But we lost those four games, all relatively close. And those four teams together are 48-6. They're not 6-48. So when we look back at this season, the Minnesota game is the only one that would be able to go on that list of bad losses. And even then, they're 11-2. It's not that bad. They got a better record than we do. You know? They're 11-2. So, sorry, I'd already rested my case, Your Honor. I'm out of order. The whole trial's out of order. This whole trial's out of order. Okay.
You consider yourself out of order there.
I am out of order.
Couple more things we're going to wrap up here. Here's a complete list of schools that have beaten a top 10 opponent in each of the past 3 years. Auburn, Georgia, LSU, Ohio State.
Wow.
You talked about recruiting a minute ago. I look back at recruiting basically since recruiting rankings got good in the early 2000s. And, you know, since Gus has taken over, you know, our recruiting rankings are 10th, 6th, 8th, 9th, 9th, 12th, and 11th. You know, you could say that's tough because some of our rivals are ahead of us in that. But I think what I'm saying with this is Auburn's recruiting is really good. It's better than it's ever been historically, more consistent than it's ever been historically. And Auburn under Gus is recruiting enough talent to be competitive. I've said this before. I'm a big believer in the blue chip ratio,
mm-hmm.
which basically means that you have to have, you know, more four or five stars on your team than three stars or lower to have a chance to win the national title. And there's only about 12 to 14 teams in the country that have that, sometimes less. And Auburn is always one of those teams since Gus has been the coach. And so I think that means that we're in that group that has a legitimate chance to win. So, you know, to go back to what you said before, you know, about the Gus Pat Dye comparison, no losing seasons under Gus. And when things are right, he's shown that he can beat anybody. And the other thing I would say, in you know, fans get frustrated and all that kind of stuff, but last year, in 2018 and in 2019, the team plays very, very hard. Even when they're not going to meet their goals and they're unhappy about it, the team plays very hard for him.
They do.
And the last thing is, not a big point for some people, but I think it's worth mentioning that I think he's shown some integrity. There hasn't been off-field embarrassments or NCAA sanctions with him during his watch. UGA's in trouble constantly during this time. So I think that, that's another thing to put in there.
All right. So what's left, Your Honor?
I think at this point we're going to rest the case. We're going to turn it over to you, the listener, the audience, and we want your feedback. What did you think about this version of the trial? What did you think about the evidence that we presented? Did it make you think about things differently, or how did you consider, Gus's tenure in relation to these things? What is the bowl game too fresh in your mind for you to have objective thoughts about it? That might be the case for some of us. But we're interested in that. And so I think, I think we should just stop there and put it out there and let people let us know what they think.
All right. So we are at AU Wishbone on Twitter and at JK Ringer and at Van Allen Plexico. And we are AUWishbone@gmail.com. So let us hear your thoughts. I'm curious. We're going to get so much, I'm afraid. But it should be interesting over the days to come after this goes up. I'll be posting this about midnight Sunday, and I'm looking forward to hearing what people think. So any final thoughts as we wrap this sucker up?
It's been fun, and thank you for all your work with the Bad Losses research.
I was off for a couple of weeks. I had the time, so I wanted to get some facts to back this up. All right. Well, I think that'll do it for us tonight. We will be back with our normal format in a week or two and talk about the basketball team. And we've got February late. I guess it's the late signing period coming up now, and lots of other interesting things going on. So otherwise, I guess our time is up. We thank you for yours, Wargill John.
Thank you, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.